Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stephen Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and gastronaut. Today, we're looking at trade in and out of the UK since Brexit. It's 2 years since the new trade deal was made with the EU. It's not just been a bumpy ride for anyone exporting. Most people in the food industry are pretty clear that it's been disastrous. In 360 episodes of this podcast, we haven't had a single member of the £240 billion food industry telling us about a positive outcome from Brexit. Now, the food industry might just be a moany bunch, and the FDF, bless them, have published some arguably positive comparable first quarter data. But gone are many of the old certainties. Instead, we've had what a recent study from the LSE called a major shock to UK-EU trade, with uncertainty, insecurity and hold-ups. Trade deals are being done, but they've largely been disastrous for the food industry. The bafflingly awful Australian and New Zealand trade deals and the one with Japan, which has heralded a drop in trade rather than a rise. Even Brexiteer George Eustace, the former Environment Secretary, told the Commons that the free trade deal with Australia was a poor deal for the UK and it gave away far too much for far too little in return. But here's the twist. We are not here to argue the toss about Brexit or even discuss why it's been disastrous. Instead, we're here to find some positives because businesses are trading and those who understand any opportunities emerging will be best placed to benefit. So today we're asking, in all seriousness, what are the post-Brexit trading opportunities for food and drink companies? What are the best ways to expand into overseas markets? How might companies around the world take advantage of the new trading landscape? And how is the UK government supporting companies who want to trade? And we're getting the advice from the very best placed person. Rachel Guyon is Director for UK Nations and Agriculture, Food and Drink at the Government's Department for International Trade, the body responsible for securing free trade agreements and reducing market access barriers. Rachel, welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast.
Thanks very much.
Now, first of all, I've given a very brief definition of your role at the Department for International Trade. How would you describe, though, your mission? What's your task?
Well, I would say that the Department for International Trade as a whole has a mission to champion open and fair global trading. And that's important because trade is growth and growth means better jobs and higher wages. And that's how we hope to improve living standards right across the UK. And for my interest as well, I'm based in Scotland and look after food and drink right across the UK, as well as teams in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. It really matters for food and drink businesses. They're in every constituency of the country. In fact, I challenge you to find one where there isn't a vibrant, exciting SME food and drink business. But what we're here to do is bring services closer to those businesses and help them export more, get value from the free trade agreements and get investment in.
Okay, so the UK voted to leave the EU in 2016. How would you say this impacted the international view of the British food and drink sector and therefore your job in terms of promoting it?
At one level, my job's easy because of the provenance and quality of UK food and drink. It's renowned for it. These are products, these are brands, the provenance is well known everywhere you go in the world. I mean, whiskey, obviously, but beyond that, gin, salmon, seafood, beef, lamb, cheddar, Stilton. We're really renowned for this. And the other thing that struck me, I was at the SIAL trade show in Paris recently, and the innovation that jumped out from UK companies on all the stands and the way they're evolving free from products, organic products, it really does speak for itself. And what they were saying, the businesses who were exhibiting, was that they were really pleased at the interest from international buyers, that they were getting good quality leads and good quality contacts from being at the trade show. And it was the quality, it was the heritage, it was the provenance, it was their innovation and their new product development. And I mean, this is an industry that has, I think, one in five manufacturing jobs, around 4.1 million people employed in it. It's a really important industry for us. And they were pleased that that was being recognised globally.
But back to the question, which is that the impact of us leaving the EU on the international view of the British food and drink sector. I know we have fantastic products, but your job is to help us export them and well, import them as well. There must have been a change in the landscape.
There's been a range of factors in recent years. Probably one of the biggest is COVID, which has affected supply chains, imports, exports. And we've watched products and companies find new markets, whether it's salmon that moved from the Chinese market to the French market and is doing really well in the US market now. We've noticed how well SME leaders are working to adapt to these changes, and we really want to help them. Whether it's Brexit and the transitions required from that, whether it's the impact of COVID, whether more recently it's the impact of the conflict in Ukraine, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and what that's done to energy prices, the impact that's had on disrupting food supply chains globally. So we can help. We're trying to provide information and support. You've been able to use our export support service available from www.gov.uk Ask Export Support Team. And they've been set up helping with inquiries about Russia and Ukraine as well as about Europe. And you can get a call back on complex information if that's what your company needs, because the service joins up with existing ones that people have been used to using, whether from Revenue and Customs or from DEFRA. And we can get all the right advice in one place collated for a company and help with that. Other things we can help with include our trade commissioners and their teams on the ground across Europe.
Well, that's what I'm most interested in, really, because it's been a tough couple of years, and we're talking about tackling trade in a post-Brexit world. I mean, we've had tons of British beetroot left to rot in the fields, EU companies looking elsewhere for products, unfeasibly long queues at Dover, lorries with food and drink queuing for miles, paperwork, fish merchants needing to fill out 71 pages of paperwork to send one lorry of fish to Europe. Now, there's reputational damage involved with these issues, and in the food industry, reputation is everything. How can you help with these issues and how they feed into trading with countries in the UK and beyond?
Absolutely. As I say, we've got trade commissioners and their teams on the ground. So if you've got an issue with accessing any of the markets in the European Union countries, let us know. Contact your international trade advisor or contact one of the new hubs in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, or come to us directly through Ask Export Support Team, and we can try and help with that, try and help with ensuring that products can get through customs. We've had a sample box initiative, for example, that's enabled companies to get small samples out to buyers. And in practical ways, we're helping ensure that the high quality UK produce is put in front of buyers with an interest. Most recently in Paris, around the SIAL trade show, the ambassador hosted a food and drink event at the official residence where we had 42 buyers and 53 UK companies and 140 people doing real business. And I was really struck by the dialogue I was able to have with some of those buyers coming up saying how surprised and heartened and overjoyed they were at how seriously every company took that event and the level of conversation and the level of dialogue and the level of connection they were able to have. So we can help with missions, taking businesses to the right markets. We can help companies get the most out of trade shows, and we can help with Meet the Buyer events. You mentioned Food and Drink Federation, their quarter one report. I'm sure you'll have seen the latest one, I think was out yesterday, the quarter three report. And UK companies are proving reasonably resilient at accessing those markets. So exports were up 42% to Italy on a year ago, 52% higher to Spain, and 35% higher to the Netherlands. And this matters, obviously. The Netherlands is one of our largest EU markets. And we're also seeing growth in non-EU markets. I've been struck. I was in Aberdeen earlier this year meeting small and medium-sized enterprises around the dialogue between the UK and the US. I was really struck at the way the patterns of exporting have changed for some companies. who are looking to export first. They've got a go global mindset right from the smallest stages of their development. And they were saying how attractive they were finding the US market, because dealing with a single state is a reasonable size to start with. And then once the regulations have been understood and you're going well with your trade there, there are more states to expand into. So there are certainly businesses finding a really good match between the quality of their product and the demand for buyers. And we can help them with that. So that's what we seek to do.
OK, well, let's take both the quarter one report and the quarter three report. I mean, we still don't have a trade deal with the US, although it's our largest non-EU supplier. It's not doing too badly in terms of our top markets. However, it's dominated by whiskey, chocolate and gin, although beef has a good showing. Quarter three, we have a large amount of manufacturers wanting to see a reduction in the costs and burdens of moving goods between the UK and the EU. Now, I mentioned Charlie Samways needing to fill out 71 pages of paperwork to send a lorry load of fish to Europe. I have a friend who closed down her company because she couldn't export anymore. Another who didn't close down but has given up exporting. What are you doing to make exporting easier?
There's a range of things that we are supporting companies with. If you want to find another market for your product, you can access the great.gov.uk, which can help find the best match between your product and the market opportunities out there. As I say, we're very willing to help, whether it's through that or Export Academy. If you have already been exporting and are finding it tricky, please get in touch with us about where we can find the best help for you. You've obviously got an exportable product out there. Let's see what we can do to help it find the best market fit, or to help with the issues that you're facing on continuing to access markets that you used to export to. So I would say, get in touch, use the systems that we've got there, and please don't lose heart. We can help you find the best fit.
But how about proactively actually changing the way that we trade with other countries and other areas? Is there a possibility that we can actually change the amount of bureaucracy involved?
I think there are huge possibilities for companies out there, in that the whole world is changing. There is a move of markets. It's estimated 2/3 of the middle classes will actually be in the Asia Pacific region in the period between the 2030s and the 2050s. And we're seeing huge opportunities for growth there, and we're keen to help companies access that. We choose a targeted specialist list of trade shows where we think the best presence will help UK companies. We're still helping, obviously, and accessing key markets in European nations, such as the Seafood Show in Barcelona, and seafood's doing well in the EU and beyond. But also looking further afield to Thailand with the Food Hotel Asia Show in September this year. As I mentioned, we were at Paris. We've also been in New York helping companies there at the Summer Fancy Food Show earlier this year. What we can also do alongside the free trade agreements is work on the issues that have a very practical impact for food businesses, such as market access barriers. So the UK government has put new agri-attaché roles in posts throughout the world where we think there is huge growth to be unlocked for UK companies. And whether it's been beef or lamb newly getting access to the Japanese market, whether it's lamb being able to go to the US this year, and as somebody who can see how much that means to the Welsh market in particular, that's been great. It's estimated to bring 37 million of value to that industry. Unlocking the pork market in Mexico. There are things that the UK government can do working together across the Trade Commissioner offices, across DEFRA and across Department for International Trade. And we're just keen to keep making progress on that and to keep helping companies then capitalise on that progress. So I think over 200 trade barriers got removed in 2020 and 2021 alone across 74 countries. And I'd really encourage your listeners to have a think about which of those markets are going to offer the most profitable route forward and the best growth for what they are making and what they're selling.
Now, most of our listeners are in the food industry. They'll be working in food companies, running their own businesses, or maybe studying and thinking of going into the sector. We have a huge amount of people who are entrepreneurs. And so for people in the early stages, possibly smaller companies that are hit by these vast bureaucratic workloads but wanting to export, where should they start? You talked about the export support service. What else have they got to turn to?
There's a couple of places I would recommend starting first. They're available online. And the reason that can help is if you're a busy business owner trying to access information, you're having to do it some, you know, out of office hours initially, probably. So if you go to great.gov.uk, you can get advice there on how to export, how to find the right markets. We've also got the UK Export Academy, which has been set up for businesses at an early stage in their export journey. And you can meet other businesses like yourselves through that as well. And that is intended to be comprehensive and going through a series of issues that you need to know about, but in a way that's hopefully easy to access. You'll find webinars, you'll find events about how to build exporting capabilities. You'll find information about market entry, rules of origin, customs processes and FTA utilisation. So we can certainly help with that there. I'm also delighted that we have new export champions across Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, joining those that are already in England. And these are businesses like other food and drink businesses. These are people who've been on that export journey. So it's a source of peer support and advice of what it's actually like to do this. And it broadens the reach of that group of very influential and helpful and inspiring, to be honest, business owners that people can turn to for a bit of real advice. How is it really? People who've been there and done it. So I'd encourage reaching out to them. And if you are in England, you will likely already have access to an international trade advisor. But if not, we can get you connected with one to see about the qualification for that dedicated one-to-one support. If you're in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, please contact our local hub offices. And we can connect businesses through those sources of advice to over 100 markets where we have Export Support Service International Markets Advisors on the ground, there to help make the contacts, help explain the rules and regulations, and just help make it that little bit easier.
Okay, now there have been some trade deals, and I mentioned in the introduction the particularly strange trade deal with Australia and New Zealand. Now, we've had livestock farmers on the podcast just absolutely their heads in their hands, I think is probably the easy description of that. Is there any likelihood of these being corrected in some way or changed so that they offer the UK more than is currently available? And I'm referring obviously to Eustace's comment that the UK gave away far too much for far too little in return. What's the future for those trade deals? Is it possible to change it so that it's less in their favour and more in ours?
I think the thing to do here is listen to all the independent voices. So the Trade and Agriculture Commission has recently concluded that the deal upholds the UK's robust domestic protections, particularly around animal welfare and food safety, which is important to us. The deal with Australia is estimated to unlock 10 billion, more than that, of additional bilateral trade. And this is important to us, obviously. We're seeing that it eliminates tariffs that should help food and drink exporters, such as on chocolate, on biscuits, crisps, gin, non-alcoholic beverages. And for example, some of those products, such as biscuit producers, if they used imported ingredients such as wheat and sugar previously, they faced a tariff. And that's now gone away. So that's really helping UK companies if we just remember how many of those jobs are in food production and in processing. And we're seeing that trade with New Zealand is expected to increase by about 60%. Boosting the economy by 800 million. So we're looking for the advantages for UK businesses on that. And to give you just one example, so New Zealand's committed to releasing perishable goods within 6 hours of arrival. So if you're a Stilton exporter, for example, that gives you a lot more confidence that your product's going to be prioritised for clearance so that your product's fresh and can meet its delivery timeframe. And that matters.
although Stilton exports to New Zealand don't really feature on the scale when we're talking about livestock imports to the UK, do they?
Livestock imports to the UK will continue to have to meet the quality standards that the UK has. We do recognise that there are bigger markets for Australia and New Zealand closer to their home, and we always want to make sure that UK food producers can take advantage out of these agreements. We are seeing that public support for free trade is high and is rising, with 70% backing the trade agreements and 10 times as many backing a deal with Australia than opposing it. So I think the key is really to keep working with the industry to realise the value that this deal could bring to them, and that other deals, such as with the CPTPP and the deals such as with Japan and Singapore, can also realise for the industry.
Okay, let's talk about some of these deals. Trade between the UK and the GCC, which are Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar and the UAE, already worth $30 billion, obviously not in the food industry, but it's a substantial amount. We've talked a lot about opportunities in this part of the world on this podcast. Now, what do you think the food and drink sector can hope to get from this deal? You know, how far up the list of priorities is food and drink?
I think it's a huge potential market for food and drink. When you think about the conditions that are faced across the Gulf, they're needing to import food. So the quality of our provenance, the quality of our produce, the free from, the alcohol-free products, the organic products, the innovative products, there's a market for all of these. For food and drink, it was over $600 million last year in terms of value of exports to the Gulf countries. And we're seeing that a deal could reduce or remove tariffs, we hope, on UK exports, including cereals, chocolate, baking products, sweet biscuits, smoked salmon, amongst others. And we're seeing the success of UK companies that have been seeking to access that market. So the Gulf Food event at the Dubai World Trade Center, we had a company, Beyond the Bean, that first went there in 2017, having been regular exhibitors since then. And they've been partnered up now and succeeded in accessing Qatar, Bahrain, Oman, Jordan, UAE and Iraq. And the Food and Drink Federation themselves have shown that trade with the United Arab Emirates is up 41% compared to the same quarter last year. So this is a growing market. And we're also finding that the reputation for UK agritech is very high. The way that we can be innovative in how markets that might be challenged for access to water or the growing conditions can actually use the science and the knowledge and the agritech developed within the UK to help solve their food security issues and reduce that need, as well as benefiting from direct imports to them of our great produce.
And in terms of, I think I mentioned this earlier, a US trade deal, which is what a lot of people are waiting for. Well, not sure if it will come ever, but what are your thoughts on that? Do you have any hopes for a US trade deal in the near future?
Well, of course, we're ready to progress a free trade agreement when the US is ready to do so as well. And we continue to keep a dialogue with them. Just last week, I was at the latest UK-US SME dialogue, which was coincidentally in Edinburgh. And the Americans were really open to UK food and drink businesses. I can certainly tell you they were excited about that. So we're taking a twin track approach in also looking to the ways to unlock barriers or make progress for UK businesses at the state level. And for food and drink companies, I think that offers a huge way forwards. It means if you're an SME, you can deal with a market that might be a good size for you. We can help and help in market as well with finding the best ways for you to find a distributor or find partners to work with or find the right market fit. And for example, there was a DIT hosted lounge at the UK Pavilion at the Summer Fancy Food Show in New York, which is one of their biggest shows for new types of food and innovative food products. So really pleased to see that. And from what I hear, the sales to the US are certainly going in the right direction.
And in terms of shifting the bureaucratic workload involved with exporting to the EU, are there likely to be changes in that? Are we likely to see the smaller companies that are so vital to the UK's food and drink industry being able to actually export without crippling themselves? Are there likely to be changes in the way business is done?
I think the key thing is to find the best way that works for your particular business. And I don't think it's a one size fits all, depending on the product, depending on the subsector, and depending on the market. So as I say, do reach out if you're having issues, and we'll see what we can do to help with those, whether it is clarity on the paperwork, whether it is logistics about the best way into particular markets. Let's see what we can do through our network of support on the ground right across all the European Union nations.
But back to the question, what are you doing to reduce market access barriers to help companies who are suffering really badly from trying to export to the EU? What is likely to change?
Well, we keep the dialogue open in all countries. So if there is a particular issue, for example, with customs, you will find that our staff will be in touch with their opposite numbers to get that resolved. DEFRA, I know, remain closely on the case around the paperwork and the phytosanitary requirements, and will be working, for example, to look at the veterinary requirements at different ports to ensure that the access is secure and made as smooth as it can be. And us knowing what the latest issues are, whether it is logistics, whether it is fuel costs, whether it's energy costs, means we can help be responsive in the way that we're reaching out to companies, but also reaching out within European nations themselves. The other thing, of course, we can do is just help companies look at the right balance of their exporting and the right markets for them that are most profitable. Again, I was really struck talking to companies at recent trade shows at how many are saying that once you take the exporting decision, it is a big shift for the business and it is a really big change. And then you're not just in one market, you're going for 2, 3, 4, 5 because you've hired the expertise, you've looked to make that commitment, and it really is going well for them. They're all pleased they did it, and we're keen to help them make the most out of that.
But do you see a tangible reduction in red tape for exporters in the near future, for exporters to the EU?
I see always trying to reduce unnecessary red tape and help businesses absolutely have the most frictionless and smoothest experience they can. And that's what we're committed to delivering with them.
But can you see a change likely in the near future?
We have had a big change in our relationship with the EU, and that has meant transition that we are all still working through. And I think the thing to do is keep helping businesses make that as smooth as possible, keep understanding how to do it as simply and readily and repetitively as feasible for them, so that they can get that business that works seamlessly for them. And that advice on the ground that we can provide from the Trade Commissioner Network aims to help with that for every business.
Rachel Guyon, Director for UK Nations and Agriculture, Food and Drink at the Department for International Trade, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you, Stefan.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, there are hundreds more at foodmatterslive.com. To make sure you never miss an episode, subscribe to the Food Matters Live podcast on your preferred platform. And if you feel inclined, why not leave us a review? Thank you so much for listening.